Attention first responders, ready for a new challenge? You can turn your leadership skills into deliciousness by becoming a Firehouse Subs restaurant owner. First responders will receive a $100,000 cash incentive to help open their restaurant. Continue serving after service. Visit FirehouseSubsFranchising.com today.
Breathing in diesel exhaust fumes is like walking into a fire without a mask. Over time, those toxins lead to cancer. Protect yourself with MagnaGrip, the easiest, most reliable exhaust removal system that features a true 100% seal to eliminate diesel exhaust fumes. To get free grant assistance, visit MagnaGrip.com.
Taking It to the Streets is all about advancing firefighter safety and operational integrity for the fire service. And now, the latest edition of Taking It to the Streets with your host, Christopher Nall.
Welcome to this edition of Buildings on Fires, Taking It to the Streets, on your street, in your city, across the country, and around the world. Taking It to the Streets is a monthly radio talk show program on fireengineering.com, Blog Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Christopher Naum. As always, heartfelt welcome to our dedicated listeners, and certainly to those of you that are just listening in for the first time. We always talk about the built environment in a variety of different aspects, and certainly for any of you that have been listening to our podcasts and now our webcast programs for any number of the past number of years, you'll certainly have recognized that both our independent standalone programs as well as our multiple series have always focused in on a number of different attributes and operational issues for a variety of building types, operational considerations, tactical risks, but certainly always talking about the relevancy and the importance of the built environment and the aspects of the predictability of building performance. All buildings are predictable in the manner in which they will operate under duress and under fire ground conditions if we understand some of the parameters in which they will perform and some of the both inherent and introduced characteristics and aspects of that building that will certainly influence fire ground decision making. I think it's certainly important when we talk about that influencing factor or factors that very well may affect and determine the outcomes during fire ground operations. And that certainly revolves around building performance and certainly the issues affecting initial size up and risk assessment. It's safe to say that the built environment continues to develop faster with greater complexity, with greater hazards and greater risks to firefighting and our operations than the tactical models are providing for. And that continues to be a driving aspect in terms of not only the challenges, but the inconsistencies of sometimes best practices, inconsistencies on what one should implement relative to your fire ground in your city, in your community, in your first do, based upon the variations or the consistency, both in terms of occupancy types, occupancy risks, the types of fire demands you may have, then also based upon the varying levels of experience and exposure that your fire service personnel, certainly within the confines of your company or certainly your station, your firehouse, your first do, and your response area. I think it's something that we've talked about in past instances on some of our other programs where, again, when we talk about that built environment, much of what we've experienced consistently, certainly over the last 20 years and even more so over the last 10 to 15, we continue to see how tactical-driven operations relative to building construction-type tactics, occupancy-type tactics, fire-driven tactics, tactical-driven operations, procedural-driven operations, and sometimes dynamic fire-ground factors that are not being recognized. And we're operating sometimes in an autopilot manner upon that first do where we may not be engaging. We're going through some motions. It's interesting. Recently, we had a presentation that we did for an organization, and it was safe to say is that based on the conversations at hand, although there were process and protocols and procedures, SOPs that drive and require certain attributes to be identified, there was much more autopilot driven occupancy and building construction related size up factors that were communicated that may not always have provided some either useful information or accurate information based upon what was being either identified, projected, assumed, and or predicted based upon either the lack of building intel or maybe just the fundamentals of what is obvious upon that arrival. So there are some challenges based upon what we are always trying to predict, what is known, what is unknown, and how to identify those emerging factors relative to building intel and input, the visual inputs, the communications, the verbal inputs that are coming from other individuals, other companies, other responding and arriving personnel, and both that verbal communications, the visual communications and information that are being processed and analyzed to eventually give us some determinations on what we need to be doing. It's safe to say, too, that when we take a look at insights coming out of various both academic and institutional arenas, one in particular that is rather old but still very, very relevant in today's context, and that was a root cause analysis that was done by the University of Georgia that took a look at line of duty deaths and some of the root cause issues derived from those line of duty death insights, recommendations, and reports. And one of the things that we have talked a little bit about in some of our other episodes and shows has been the focal point on this issue dealing with the inadequacy of preparation for or anticipation of adverse events during operations. It's safe to say that during the initial operations and arrival of both companies and commanding officers and assuming both tactical operations and strategic operations, and both the tactical size up by the first due company or the passing of that size up to the second due arriving company, there is a company level size up. There is also the first due command officer size up that is either building upon the first due officer or is independent unto itself based upon the arrival sequence. In other words, if I do have an incoming and arriving command officer that's arriving first due in sequence of or concurrent with companies, it very well may default to the commanding officer to initiate that size up, and that is more comprehensive. Typically, in terms of both company and command level size up, if one is done prior to the other in a sequential manner, typically, there's going to be a more robust or more complete buildup from that first due size up that the commanding officer will be initiating based upon additional insights, additional intel, possibly additional communication, as well as what has been initiated within those first few minutes of the operations at the company level. So there is a very distinct, there's actually three different types of size up. Or even four for that matter, if I want to be a little bit more complete. There's the initial first due size up at the company level. There is a command size up that's initiated. There is a more defined size up that is going to be a statusing size up as the incident is unfolding, certainly within that 10-minute tactical window of operations. And then as conditions are either continuing relative to a combat engagement, or there is the aspects of control being initiated, then there's going to be a status or a benchmarking size up and evaluation and read on where the companies are, what the status of that incident may be relative to that benchmark. And that benchmark will typically take place within that 10-minute tactical window of operations. It is distinctively different than having a PAR at the 20-minute elapsed time frame, and not only doing the PAR, but also having a more concise and predominant update of incident status, progress, challenges, operational changes, and again, some of the aspects dealing with building risk, operational integrity, company resources, and likelihood of success relative to, you know, are we operating in a manner that's doubtful, or this incident is going to be controlled in a shorter period of time. So there's a number of different communication types, sound bites that are being utilized. And again, I think many of our listeners out there are familiar with what has what is typical in some organizations from East Coast to West Coast, what's very common in terms of communications and the absence of showing up and just hitting the buttons when we do have good, robust communications over the radio as well as face-to-face. Those are the kinds of things that we become very conditioned to and develop our skill sets on. So it's certainly safe to say that there's a wide gamut of different elements. We will talk a little bit as we get into the meat of our program here on some of the history behind sides, which I think is very, very important to recognize. For those of you that may not know where some of the attributes and conditions of sides up have originated, we want to take a little bit of time to talk about that. But again, we're going to focus in on some of the attributes that revolve around building performance criteria that one would evaluate in that size up. A little bit of a discussion for obvious reasons on some of the other priorities in terms of what we call severity, urgency, and growth. Just a very simplified way to take a look at identification and then prioritization of those leading issues affecting the operations. And those two leading issues are always going to revolve around civilian life safety and then building performance to allow us to conduct operations in, around, on top, or underneath that structure. So it's all about identifying building integrity, both initially and during the on-course of the operation for that 10 to 15 to 20 minute operational time. But it's very, very critical when we talk about identifying building performance in that size up. So to even determine whether we have a sort of a go or no-go situation presenting itself, and more importantly, what is the degree of risk? What is the degree of severity, urgency, and growth? We'll give a little bit more insight on that, but it all falls back into what we call the four common reads on the fire ground: reading the fire ground, reading the building, reading the compartment, and then reading the company. The human performance portion of it is something that we implemented into this four reads on the fire ground and quite a number of years ago. A number of organizations have expanded upon that. But again, I think fundamentally when we initiated and conceived this concept of reading the building and reading the fire ground, and then ultimately the four core elements going back almost 20 years. Again, these concepts were developed in an orchestrated manner that, again, developed themselves over a period of time that expanded upon our initial modeling of the first arriving, construction, tactics, and safety. So when we talk about the sequencing and this importance and how they all play out, first arriving, construction, tactics, and safety, they're integrated. The construction and the building characteristics, performance-related issues, the building reads, they all ultimately will highly influence decision-making, influence the incident action plan, certainly are played out in the development of strategic objectives, but they also will become very apparent in the tactics and tactical modes that are implemented by the various companies in their respective disciplines and domains for operations. So it's straightforward. We'll talk about that importance of, again, of building compartment and company. It's so fundamental, and it really filters back down to the essence of operations. If we take a look at what we are doing on today's fire ground, and it also, again, relates back historically, the first arriving has everything to do with the building, the compartment, and the company. The building and the construction as it relates to, again, their influence on tactics that have a direct influence on safety, which really is a more global statement dealing with risk management of operations at a variety of different levels. The building reads and our tactical deployments certainly revolve around some issues dealing with the built environment, the structure, the occupancy. All buildings are predictable in terms of how they will perform if we have that identification. And we've talked about predictability, building issues dealing with whether it be a Main Street Type 3 constructed building or a mega mansion or that legacy four-post residential or a bungalow, whether it be a California bungalow or a Cape Cod or a graystone or a brownstone or a three walk-up tenement and so forth. So there's a number of different attributes all related to building types, occupancy type, occupancy risk, and the types of things that we call things relative to these built structures and occupancies from East Coast to West Coast. And there are some consistencies, but just as I just mentioned, there are some unique regional lexicon and terminology that relates back to somewhat of a similar thing or to the types of structures that are unique in a geographical area. And that's very, very important to know. I think it's safe to say that, again, based upon some extensive travels over many, many years or decades of time on my end, I certainly had the ability to see what these variations in both building type, programming spaces, construction materials, some of the types of features that are going into variations on the residential, variations on the garden apartment or the tenement building or the walk-ups, or again, the row house, the row frames, the mini mansions, the mega mansions, commercial structures. There's such a variety, and they do have variations that many of you know are different from north to south, east to west, and certainly in the Midwest homeland areas of the United States. So I'm certainly very much aware of those and very sensitive to that. And it actually plays into many of our concepts and into our program deliveries as we go around the United States delivering our lecture and hands-on program and our reading the building classes and in the street walking lecture tours. Again, I talked about building compartment and company. I think the other most critical element we talk about looking at building performance and the size up criteria is the aspect of time, the delta time, the elapse of time, especially from time of arrival, having an appreciation for that elapse of time based upon potential origination of the event, identification that there is an event, the call in, the alarm receipt, the alarm processing, the dispatching, then our turnout time, arrival time, and then that reflex time, So time of arrival, our reflex time to go into a mode of operation or just get from curbside into the building, whether it be vertical, horizontal, or into an area where the incident very well may be. Or obviously upon arrival, there's going to be some indicators that are very evident upon arrival that we have some type of evolving condition, typically a fire condition, as we're at least framing it out in this standpoint, dealing with a structural fire ground. And then also, again, severity, urgency, and growth. We may have nothing showing. Or we may have something showing, and that something can be very variable too. Again, from something very, very minor in appearance that certainly suggests something, but certainly they may not be taken for or should be taken for granted, but also something possibly more significant or severe. So severity, urgency, and growth may also be masked by some conditions upon that arrival that may not be evident based upon the location of the compartment within that particular structure, within a given space and floor, whether it be deep in the building or in something very simple with a smaller square foot or a smaller footprint. So the more complex the structure, the more complex and diverse the footprint of that building may be, both in terms of square footages and size, the more likely there's going to be a significant reflex time to gain entry into that structure, move through it horizontally or vertically to get to a particular compartment or area of operation that truly indicates, based upon the conditions we are encountering, what we may have. And then identifying severity, urgency, and growth, potential for extension, fire propagation, heat propagation, who and what is at risk, and then how that all plays out relative to deployment, command determinations for strategic objectives and the strategic incident action plan, and then what we're going to do. And hopefully we are in a place that we're able to act upon those conditions very readily without any lapse of time. The longer it takes us to get into that degree of engagement, obviously severity, urgency, and the growth factors are going to come into play. The RIT, the other part of this, when we talk about building performance and the size up, one of the most critical elements that we want to be evaluating upon that first due size up relative to the building reads, identifying the tactical risks on that first due is going to be the RIT. And the RIT goes back to building RIT. Resiliency, integrity, and time. What is the, again, and this feeds back on the predictability of building performance. Certainly not the first time we've been talking about it. It certainly plays out into just about everything we've had a conversation on in nearly all of our presentations here on our program. But clearly one of the most fundamental elements in today's modern fireground size up is the integrate. Number one is the comprehension and understanding of what the concept is, but being able to implement that in terms of sizing up and how that plays out into our operations and that how that plays out in terms of the tactical risks. So when we talk about RIT, in terms of building RIT, in terms of the predictability of performance. It goes back to identifying both the inherent and introduced characteristics in the building that relate back to resiliency, the integrity, and the time relative to fire and heat exposure under fire ground conditions. Resiliency actually is twofold. There's sort of a double R. It's the resiliency as well as the resistance. It's sort of a twofold element or two-edge sword element. It's not only the resistance, but it's also the resiliency. And resiliency gives us the ability for that to take a beating and still allow certain elements of structural integrity and building performance to be maintained. It's also the resistance. It's the ability to resist the influencing factors or the thermal assault from both flame and heat impingement on the building proper, and that's relative to the compartment on the building. So again, we talk about building and compartment. It's the importance of the compartment's level of RIT, resiliency, integrity over time. It's the understanding of the building's resiliency, integrity over time, and then how that relates to what may occur relative to the growth factors in terms of the fire propagating, extending, auto extension, and moving into exposure. So resiliency, integrity, and then it's always about the delta time regarding operations and both prior to, during, and then the subsequent conditions of operations. It is all about, again, building construction, managed risks, aggressive operations, tactics, and safety. That's first and foremost, and certainly should be in the immediacy of operations. I think one of the biggest issues affecting incoming companies and commanding officers, when we talk about the first due, again, the first due facts include some of the most specific issues, and they're pretty straightforward, right? It's predicting adverse fire behavior and the potential for structural compromise or collapse. It is certainly one of the most challenging tasks facing first due companies and commanders at a fire scene. Usually the lack of building information or the lack of information on construction, the building, fire conditions, the fire size, fire location, fire burn time, the conditions of the building, fuel load, both fuel load relative to the fire load packages in the compartment, the fuel load of the building, the occupancy load of the structure. So again, there's a variety of different loads, and we talk about them. It's certainly building load. It's the fire load. It's the occupancy load of the structure. It's certainly all of those, along with many others that we could expand upon. But they certainly at times may make the task nearly impossible. But again, however, having key construction considerations, fire ground indicators, when presented, when recognized, when identified for their relevancy in terms of comprehension, prioritization, but when they are identified and identified for their relevancy and importance to the operations, they can dramatically influence operational outcomes, both initial and then subsequent during that 10 to 15 minute period of time. So again, when key building considerations and fire ground indicators, when presented, recognized, identified for their relevancy, prioritized, and again, the relevancy for their importance to the operations can dramatically change operational outcomes. And they need to be identified. They are part of this expanding element of initial on-scene size up. So we talked about the four reads. And again, just fundamentally, when we talk about the first due, talk about that first part of that initial tactical box, we're hopefully first putting our eyes onto that, we are normally putting eyes onto the building and to the incident. It's the first set of eyes where we are getting visual indicators, although there may be a number of communications that are being heard coming across the radio based upon our response from dispatch, from other units that are going out of quarters and responding from whatever their locales may be. But what are the visual indicators that might be indicative on the horizon within the sky that are suggesting certain elements, whether it be heavy smoke showing or a visible column or that loom is up or a glow in the distance during nighttime operations? There's certainly a lot of different things that many of us can relate back to when we talk about the visual indicators as well as the communications. But again, once we do have that arrival, We do put eyes on the building and on the incident. Helps define the incident priorities. We're looking at establishing and setting actions, direction, establishing and or passing command, depending upon the arrival sequence and who's arriving at what particular point. And that also is influenced by severity, urgency, and growth of the incident. Again, Chief Brunicini established quite a bit of criteria. Many of our textbooks, whether it be Chief Norman's handbook on Fire Officer's Guide to Fire Ground Operations or any other of the number of textbooks and tactical books that talk about getting into tactical mode of operations, size up, and so forth. Again, the influencing on command decision-making, time and performance influencers, tactical, having tactical discipline, having both tactical agility, tactical rigor, and also tactical mobility. These are also some other elements here that we'll just put out there for some further conversation. But again, each one of those has some other subsets that gets into what does tactical discipline mean in terms of the initial size up, in terms of agility, in terms of sequential or concurrent operations. We've recognized and identified through research that we have to slow down a little bit on the fire ground upon arrival. It's not always just moving off of the rig immediately into the structure. That entry through the perimeter walls and the envelope of the building may be enough to start changing certain factors within the aspects of the compartment within the building. So simply put, first do actions, identify, assess, predict, prioritize our actions, engagement, intervention, overcome the interferences, make the push, have resiliency at the company level based upon the conditions encountering. And ultimately, the goal upon that first arriving is to alter and manage the arrival conditions. That's pretty fundamental. And that's just a simple incident action when we talk about what is it that we're trying to identify? Again, relative to that building performance, that building size up leads us back into those parameters. Again, identification, assessment, prediction, prioritization of the actions, engagement, intervention, overcoming the interferences that may be present, making the push, having resiliency at that company level, and then altering and managing the arrival conditions. Again, all for whom? And that's obviously for the civilians that may be in either known or projected degrees of distress, or known to be trapped and or incapacitated in the building, or just, again, trying to identify what and who may be present in that particular structure and how that is going to play out relative to risk factors and other actions based upon what we are dealing with, both in terms of just dealing with fire identification, fire control, and mitigation and extinguishment to be able to, again, control the environment, manage the building's degradation. And at the same time, the primary mission has always been civilian life safety. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in terms of the dominant first do actions. There are, again, first do company, first do chief, first do commander related conditions and interest levels. We're not going to get into the details on that. But again, we are managing the risks on the first do at those three different groups. It's also, again, just simply put, intervention, dealing with the time elapsement to the delta time, looking at our tactical windows, having both recognition prime decision making, having or naturalistic decision making, utilizing knowledge, skills in a building, having building intel, pre-fire planning, identifying the variables and focusing in on some of those variables, identifying those actions that ultimately have a direct correlation to severity, urgency, and growth, and the aspects of RIT. Again, so simply put, again, the variables are being focused upon, looking at the actions and having a fluid considerations on severity, urgency, and growth, and having an understanding of the twofold element of RIT. There is building RIT, and there's also company level RIT. So it is twofold from that standpoint, because when we talk about building RIT, resilience, integrity, and time, there's also this aspect of human performance relative to our companies and our personnel, the resources, and their resiliency, their integrity over the elapse of time. If they are not able to function and be able to extend themselves over the course of the initial operation, then that in itself becomes a variable and a level of risk in which the companies and or personnel and or team have to be rotated out, or they very well may be a part of the ensuing complexity of the problem leading to a mayday. So when we talk about resiliency, we talk about company and personal level integrity. It goes back to both mental and physical agility, both mental and physical capabilities in terms of integrity, resiliency over the period of time, the elapse of time that, again, is applicable toward the RIT conditions. Another element that has some influencing on our initial size up, and that's the condition tactical response and conditioning aspects of our tactical response. How are we conditioned in terms of our training, our background, and such? And it revolves around a pretty simple five-prong area. It's recognition, prime decision making, which now is referred back to naturalistic decision making. It's the aspects of experience, the aspects of awareness, knowledge, and then the influence of science and technology. So when we put those together, in terms of recognition, prime decision making, which revolves around naturalistic decision making, both at the company, the individual, and the command level, it's also the experience, awareness, and knowledge, and that has relevancy to building fire and compartment, the knowledge base, the limitations or capabilities, the science and technology part of it. That really drops back into, I think, the identified need to have a much more adaptive versus prescriptive fire ground, both in terms of an adaptive approach versus a prescriptive, very linear step one or step two, three, four, following a very linear process in terms of size up, which normally is very concise and very specific, but may not give us the right identification of attributes that are needed to be processed, prioritized, and then how they'll play out with our operations. Primary tenet of those operations, as I just mentioned, relative to the the condition tactical response, when we talk about the CTR, again, it goes back to resiliency, integrity and time, predictability and probability of performance of the building. It's identifying the compromise and the collapse potential of that building in terms of characteristics. And that is first and foremost, we'll go into that a little bit further, identifying the fire dynamics, how that relates back to our condition tactical reflex, severity, urgency, and growth. High risk, high consequence conditions, both in terms of the building as well as the company. And again, identifying parameters to keep dealing with what we are always conveying and advocating regarding in a more adaptive fire ground management model, perspective, and process. Fundamentally, it goes back to building, compartment, and company. When we're talking about the building and the compartment, we're dealing with the compartment, we're talking about the fire conditions. Those are three critical components. And the company, obviously, relative to the resources, our staffing levels, knowledge, skills, and abilities. The building, when we talk about the building, again, the BCCs, when we talk about the building, it's all about the predictability of its performance, the inherent things that we learn that, again, are going to be associated with a particular building and occupancy upon that arrival. So there are learned elements there that far go beyond the fundamental five classifications of building classes and types, and then also goes into the aspects of the building, the era, and building anatomy. It's it's the building anatomy, structural conditions that go into the building. It's understanding the era and vintage of the building. It's understanding the anatomy of the structural relative to the structural conditions that go into the buildings proper, and then also the level of risks that are inherent to that building's type, the anatomy, era and vintage, and then relating that back to operational risk. So it's pretty simple. They're all influenced by the time element, both on the back end, pre-incident, during the incident processing, our arrival, and then subsequently during our operation. So it's pretty straightforward. I think it's safe to say when we talk about our building facts, again, when we talk about construction tactics and safety, the construction, again, directly relates back to building performance. The tactics relate back to the compartment. And then when we talk about safety, it has everything to do with the company and ultimately the operational issues. Fundamentally, one of the most important aspects of building performance size up revolve around identification of the fundamentals of the building domain. And we've presented this before. And again, as a refresher and to reinforce what we were talking about here on this episode, it is all about five fundamental pieces that we need to tie into our building performance size up and tie into our building process size up. We had a robust conversation a few months back in another large regional conference here in the United States talking about these. And we actually extended this out into the field when we did our walking lecture tour, reading buildings and talking about these in the streets and having our curbside conversations. Fundamentally, again, this relates to all buildings and all occupancies. We look at the first element of that is identifying the building's construction or building systems or building's anatomy. That also is going to be important to identify relatively within what span of time, what is the era and vintage that has a very specific series of attributes that come out of that. Identifying the occupancy type, the occupancy use, and the occupancy characteristics, which include, again, what is the footprint. So it goes back to the building footprint, but it also goes into, when we talk about occupancy issues, identifying the occupancy considerations regarding the building's footprint, the floor plan, the layout, the numbers and location of rooms, the related levels of risk, square footages, volumes, interconnectivity, both vertical and horizontal. So there's a number of different attributes that fall out of the occupancy component. So that's item number two. Identifying the building's performance capabilities or inherent characteristics dealing with compromise and collapse. All buildings, the most critical element in terms of that initial size up is identifying characteristics that are inherent or introduced that or are being affected by fire conditions, heat conditions that are going to lead to or be expanded upon or be influenced by that may result in compromising conditions or catastrophic or collapse conditions, either isolated, catastrophic, recoverable, or things that are going to be very, very significant to toward the survivability of civilians and then also survivability and operability of the companies operating. Fourth is the identification of the methods of materials of construction that went into that era and vintage of that occupancy, of that structural system of the building, and then identifying fire dynamics both within the compartment or that are also inherent to the building. So again, simply put, a building built, let's say a single family residence built in the 1940s, it's a residential structure that has legacy, fully dimensioned lumber framing systems, a balloon frame, building anatomy system of a residential single family occupancy. We can identify that it has minimal collapse conditions relative to fire exposure. And we go back to the fire dynamics. But again, if something does occur relative to flame or heat impingement over the lapse of time, the conditions are going to be manageable. It's going to potentially lead to a isolated condition relative to a compromise versus a extended collapse, unless we have significant areas within the compartments. Let's say we've got an entire concealed area of the roof or an occupied area of the roof that may be involved in fire. That certainly will lead to a more involving collapse of dormers, of the ridge beams and rafter assemblies based upon the complexity of these roofs and so forth. So there's some things that are coming out of them. And again, we know that there's a certain type of method and materials of construction that went into that particular building based upon the era and vintage. We understand that, again, if we talk about balloon frame construction, that has everything to do with the fire dynamics of the structure in terms of how fire will propagate, extend, and travel, how fire dynamics will affect the building within the compartment, within the concealed spaces. So those are the five fundamentals that are going to be added into our size up considerations. And then there's a predominant building consideration relative to building features, and that's pretty straightforward. It's identifying aspects of the roof system, the perimeter walls of the building, the compartment characteristics, floor and or ceilings, and then the fifth item of that is the absence or presence of voids. So it's also the characteristics of the void. So any building that I'm sizing up, one of the first things I'm looking at is going to be identifying and processing this through in a very, very rapid standpoint, but looking and identifying the building anatomy, construction systems, the era and vintage, identifying occupancy type, occupancy risk, the characteristics of those, identifying the characteristics of compromise and collapse, obviously identifying either that are either consistent or the anomaly. So methods and materials of construction. Is there something that's been added onto the building? Are there features of the construction of that particular building that methods and materials are different? Or I'm getting communications, or again, there's interior size up. So there's initial curbside size up. There's things that I'm going to be evaluating upon entering into the building. Am I seeing something that's indicating that there's a different method of material that relates back to era and vintage that's part of a renovation or addition and so forth that may affect fire dynamics and affect that delta time? So the five and five, construction, occupancy, collapse compromise, methods and materials, fire dynamics, in conjunction with roof system, perimeter walls, floor and or ceilings, compartment considerations, absence and presence of voids, coupled with resiliency, integrity, and time that I'm considering into the equation, coupled with the most critical element, severity, urgency, and growth. What do I have upon arrival? What's the severity? What's the urgency? What's the growth? And how do they play out in the development of my plan, especially at the tactical level, which this becomes a very fluid, dynamic process, a little bit more insight, insightfulness that one would do at the command level, and then certainly evaluating, validating based upon what the assumptions were at the tactical company level, size up, command, initiation of operations at the command level, and then the formal, extended operation as we move into the 10 plus minute of operations. Safe to say that one of the other things that one has to consider that we would certainly advocate and suggest is that taking a look at the fire origin or suspected and or known, it's important to have some appreciation for this, especially when we talk about the variations of our building types. And in some building types and occupancy types, this becomes very, very critical to either identify and validate or make the assumptions of or clearly know as we are projecting, or excuse me, as we are extending and gaining access into the various areas of the building. So there's both fires that are internal or external, fires within the compartment, we talk about room and contents, and then fires within the structure. And certainly we talk about the fires that may be affecting both system assemblies, concealed spaces, and voids. That's why the identification of the characteristics of voids within all buildings. All buildings may have some degree of voids. It's just a matter of how extensive they are. Are they inherent, such as a balloon frame structure, which is inherently an entirely building built with voids. We may have roof extensions. We may have voids that are present, these concealed spaces that have significant size and volume and square footages and cubic footages. They are important. They are very, very mission critical in today's world to identify and implement into operations. So again, fires internal and external, compartment fires, room and contents and so forth, and then fire in the structure, system, assembly, concealed space issues, and how they are going to be impacted by flame and or heat impingement. Each requires a different approach. It requires, again, validation, assumptions, identifying what we are presuming, and how that plays out in terms of those variables. So there is a little bit of a different add-on when we talk about the fires and structures and fires and compartments. I'm going to go through a list here and just think about how they have different bearings upon our arrival. So there is a compartment. And these are where fires can originate from and go to. And they have each one also has different implications on the fire ground. So I'm just going to give you this list here. So we can have a compartment fire to a structure fire. We can have a structure fire to compartment fire. We can have an external condition, external fire to compartment, external fire to a structure fire. So an external fire might be a condition such as a cigarette butt that's been discarded into a mulch pile. It's an external origination point that turns into a structure fire as it moves into the outer face, gets into a particular condition at the ground level, and next thing you know, we have a structural fire. So it goes beyond that. So it's compartment to structure. We can have structure to compartment. Compartment to compartment fire extension. We can have compartment to an external condition, compartment to an external face to the structure. We can have external to compartment, external to structure, external to compartment to structure, and then compartment to structure. So you may never have heard of this before. They are certainly something worthy of additional conversation in terms of operational tactics and so forth, but that it's an important concept to comprehend, and then more so the application of it in terms of the fire ground. Severity, urgency, and growth, when we talk about those risk factors, resilient. So under that risk, it's risk relative to resiliency, integrity, and time, and then the risk relative to severity, urgency, and growth. Those things that are severity in terms of the demands, the levels of risk, the urgency, they are the prioritized priorities that are initiated. And again, when we talk about urgency, we talk about immediate actions, timely actions, those actions that are deferrable, or those actions that are done at risk, and they're time dependent. So there's just four very common elements: immediate, timely, deferrable, or done at risk under the most agorist of conditions. There are going to be influencing factors that are going to include non-negotiable priorities. We identify the risks, the levels of safety, rely on critical thinking, resilience, integrity, the aspects of elapsed time, the influence on decision-making, both the strategic and tactical level, and how those will influence both our operations and those outcomes. There are going to be variables that are going to be present there. It's safe to say one of the things that I truly believe when we take a look at the influencing factors include three specific areas. Building integrity related to collapse and compromise over delta time, the aspects of fire severity relative to megawatts of energy over delta time in terms of fire severity and in terms of the fire load package, building fire load packages and so forth, and then ultimately command performance in terms of the human performance issues. The other variables are pretty straightforward when we talk about operational issues. And I think it's safe to say, too, that one of the things we don't talk nearly enough, and although there are a number of individuals who, a number of our colleagues who talk at great lengths about go and no-go criteria, just a simple thing I'll throw out here now regarding the degree of fire involvement or the degree of fire severity. So there's a number of different concepts out there. I'm just going to put this out as a soundbite. We'll talk a little bit more about this, I think, in one of our future episodes. And I do believe we may have discussed this to some degree in one of our other recent episodes here earlier this year. But one of the things that is pretty consistent in our first arriving model for first arriving construction tactics and safety that goes back to building performance is the 25 and 50. And it's pretty straightforward. If I have 25% or less of fire involvement, it's going to relate back to resiliency, integrity, and time. It gives me a 75% degree of positive regarding resiliency, integrity of that building relative to this expanding initial 10 minutes of operations. So within the 10 minutes of operations, if I have 25% or less, assuming that in that 10-minute window, there are going to be fire progression, fire extension that we are hoping to control, but we may not. I still have, after that 10-minute window, the likelihood of still a higher percentage of building integrity regarding resiliency integrity over that elapse of time that is a manageable degree of RIT. When I move into a 50% or greater degree of fire involvement, either known, suspected, or validated, or observed, that 50% or greater, based upon the next 10-minute window of operations, actually starts limiting. Instead of having possibly 50% or greater of building integrity, I now start having possibly 25% or less integrity of that building or fire area or the compartment. Again, so it's not only a building, but it's also the compartment. So I may have, after 10 minutes of operation, if there's 50% or a greater degree of involvement in that structure, my window starts narrowing much, much smaller, and I'm actually working with a higher, much predominantly higher level of risk that is in the 25% or less. So thus, those two actually show you 25% or less involvement gives me a 75% or greater. Even when I've operated in 10 minutes of operational time, I very well may have 50% integrity of the compartment of that building available to me. But again, it's diminishing very rapidly or maybe very specific to the compartment and the location of the building. In other words, if I do have fire and or heat that's penetrated and got into a concealed area or void, now we know that within that 10-minute window, it's very probable and likely that structural systems, component, and or assemblies may be degraded. Again, we talk about a quarter inch of mass, loss of mass on a southern pine piece of lumber, that in 10 minutes it's gonna potentially lose about a quarter of an inch of surface mass as part of its integrity, and that's going to lead to potentially a collapse within that very short period of time if it doesn't already start happening. So we tie fire dynamics, we tie insights from R&D and from some of the studies. Take a look at fire protection engineering. These are all first and fundamental to what we're suggesting. So 50% or greater, it reduces that endo after 10 minutes of operation. So 50% or greater upon arrival, 10 minutes tactical operational time to initiate primary searches, possibly initiate either a protected search or initiate initial fire suppression. Given that 10 minutes of operational time in which fire still is going to be potentially growing until it's either controlled and or mitigated, but even in a controlled standpoint, there may be building degradation that's occurring in that next 10 minutes of operation, we most probably may have 25% or less availability of building integrity, thus the reason why we have a high-risk environment. So just a very simple approach toward that standpoint that one has to consider. The other thing I just want to make mention, and again, I don't want to get too far along into some of the conversation here. I just want to introduce a couple of things here, and I know we're well into our time frame here for the podcast, and it's challenging at best, and I sort of get it. One of the things that fundamentally, when we talk about construction-based tactics and construction-based size-up, has always been identifying, you know, do I have a wood frame, a single-family residence? Do I have a type 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 type structure, whether it be the typing, the classification, or, you know, I'm arriving and I've got a 3-brick ordinary with an ensuing fire on the number 2 floor. So sometimes we use fire-resistive, non-combustible, ordinary heavy timber or wood framing. Some may utilize a lightweight construction, which really is a misnomer. Also, sometimes it's very specific and useful, and other times it may not. The typing may or may not in terms of that, but that falls always under the NFPA 220 standard. That 220 standard was drafted in 1952, first issued in 1954. Again, 70 plus years of time. They have remained consistent, 16 different editions of that standard. But again, recognize this, is that prior to the 1950s, our buildings did have different classifications. And actually, in 1905, the first attempts based upon the introduction of the National Building Code with the National Board of Fire Underwriters actually established classifications of buildings. And at that point in time, there was only 3 classifications, type 1, 2, and 3. Type 1 was frame construction. Type 2 was non-fireproof construction, of which we had 2 subsets, and they included both ordinary construction and mill construction. And then the third classification was fireproof construction. So it's safe to say that, and again, it's really not safe to say, we should know that our buildings were classified in a different manner, that the developing codes and standards and ordinances from the early, late 1800s, early 1900s had different codes and classifications, and we had different classes that were influenced. In the 1930s, we had a different grouping of class 1 through 6. The 1960s brought both different groups 1, group 2, subclassifications of 1 alpha, 2 alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta, and so forth. And there are some municipalities that still use these older types of classifications in their buildings and utilize them both in terms of their building intel relative to what's coming across their MDTs and what they also may be referring to in their size up. So there's a lot of things out there, guys, that relate back to this. And I think we'll have another program that gets into this level of detail of again, some anatomy, some building anatomy benchmarks that all originated actually back in the mid to late 1800s, 1867, for as a specific time frame. One of the leading things that put a lot of this in motion was the Tenement Housing Act of 1867, the Chicago Fire in 1871, the Old Law Tenement Act in 1879 that actually led to a number of changes on building construction. These are all relevant to sizing up. So if I have a particular building of construction in a certain era, in the late to early 1900s and in the 1930s, 1950s, 1960s, and so on, they all revolve around what went into these buildings relative to construction and so forth. And we need to know them. These are the things that come about through recognition, prime decision making, naturalistic decision making, understand inherent, introduced characteristics. So just a little quick little throw in of some history behind that, but just recognizing that coupled with some of the issues dealing with the life cycle of the building, the introduction of electricity in the 1920s, the issues of that came about for post-World War II era modernization issues in the 1960s, the energy crisis that changed some building characteristics in the 1970s through 76 in the mid-cycle era, renovation, mid-century conservation issues, adaptive reuse is very common here now. So again, there's just a number of different elements here. So quickly here, I just want to close out some conversations, talk a little bit about some size up criteria. I've talked a little bit about the importance. I truly believe that I think if we implement some of the issues dealing with severity, interest, and growth, identify resiliency, integrity, and time, take a look at the 5 and 5, again, building construction, occupancy issues, collapse compromise characteristics, the methods and materials of construction, the fire dynamics, which will relate back to severity, urgency, and growth, identify those considerations dealing with the roof system, perimeter walls, compartment characteristics, the issues dealing with floor and or ceilings, and then the absence, presence, and void. So resilience, integrity, and time, severity, urgency, and growth, this is all part of the size of criteria. I think many of us are familiar with the acronym of COAL was WEALTH that Chief John Norman has been utilizing in his textbook, certainly over the last, going on 30 plus years, first introduced in 1990. But in actuality, the COAL was WEALTH criteria was actually introduced in the FDNY system back in the mid to late 1930s. There's a number of different anecdotal information that some of which was written in Williams Clark preface book on fireground tactics back in 1974 that talks about maybe in a little different sequencing of line items. In other words, the COAL was WEALTH criteria, although the acronym may not have existed, that criteria was identified as being important as part of a size up process in that mid to late 1930s in the FDNY fire system. It's also important to note that size up as a process was identified first and promoted in 1951 by Chief Lloyd Lehman. Actually, it started in 1951. It was expanded in 1953. And to be familiar with it, it's just pretty straightforward, and we utilize it to a great extent. It talks about facts, probability, situational issues, decision, and the plan. And that five-step process deals with the facts, the things that you know, the probabilities of things that are likely to happen, our own situation, our resources, our capabilities, decisions, making the attack, the tactical decision-making aspects, and then the plan, talking about the plan of operation, the development of a plan to mitigate the incident. Straightforward, again, first introduced and expanded upon in 1953 by Chief Lloyd Lehman. We still utilize it today. We have the acronym of COAL was WEALTH with occupancy, area, potential, life, water supply, apparatus and personnel, street conditions, weather, exposures, auxiliary appliances, location, extent of fire, time of day, and hazards. So pretty straightforward. Some of us utilize cheat sheets. Some of us utilize recall and memorization, and others have a variety of hybrids from that particular standpoint. Size up again. What are we utilizing? What's the process? What's the degree of communications? Is it on the fly? Is it rigorous? Is there silence? Is there no size up whatsoever? We're just stretching the line and going in. Are we utilizing the Wikipedia version of size up? When is that too much? When is it not enough? Are we adaptive based upon occupancies? There's a variety of issues. So again, just sort of an open question. Again, what are you using? Is it on the fly? Is it rigorous? Is it meaningful? Because there's the other aspect here. What is it that we are saying based upon our observations? Is it meaningful to the ensuing and developing operation? or are we just reiterating that what's on that that index card? Are we just reiterating what the SOPs are requiring us to do or suggesting us to do? And again, when is it too much? When is it not enough? So it's very important to note. Another little tidbit of history is that Size Up first really was identified in the first textbook written for the fire service, the first modern textbook in the developing modern fireground of the 1930s. So in 1932, in the first edition of the Fire Chief's Handbook, in that book, it talks about sizing up. It talks about size up, and it talks about the first do. And I'll just actually bring up here and read this sort of verbatim. So in 1932, it talks about sizing up or size up, a quick survey of the situation as encountered by the fire department upon arrival. And here's that genesis. It talks specifically about life hazard and property hazard. So although Brunicini promoted that in the mid-1980s, it actually originated in the Fire Chief's Handbook in 1932 in the developing modern fireground area that they recognize, because it goes on to state that, again, they talk about the modern era of the fire service and the need for best practices. And that is all part of what was issued in 1932, almost 100 years ago. So in that edition, they talk about size up. They talk about the importance of having an initial plan of operation based upon the arrival of a first officer. And they also state, upon the arrival of the first arriving officer, rests heavily the highest level of responsibility. So they recognize that the responsibilities were for the first arriving officer to evaluate, size up, identify the parameters, and identify what the plan of approach were implemented as identified as being a best practices in 1932 and continue to be the consistencies in fireground operations. They also talked about sizing up in terms of building height, construction, the numbers of openings, fire location, occupancy types, exposures, both internal and external, wind considerations. So we think we've only been talking about wind-driven conditions and so forth over the last 15 or 18 years. No, they had an appreciation and talked about that in 1932 and continued to define that in 1960 when they talked about that in the second edition of operation. Scientifically and carefully fought fires extinguished quickly, confined to the smallest area, direct to the seat of the fire by interior means when possible. So when we talk about where did interior operations originate, they originated in the best practices as written and as documented in the 1932 edition of the International Association of Fire Chiefs Handbook. They also talk about ventilation, opening up the building. The term opening up was coined in that edition and promoted at a time in which public opinion within the fire service was that it was considered poor practice. So just some considerations from that particular standpoint. So there are a number of different elements that are driven out of that. Again, when we talk about identification and sizing up the building, there are some pretty straightforward elements. We're talking about evaluating, assessing, obtaining both building intel, looking at assumptions, validating those, utilizing our experience. But when we evaluate, we're evaluating the building, evaluating conditions, identifying influencers and stressors, identifying the predictability based upon, again, our knowledge, our skills, our recognition, prime decision-making, our gut sometimes, assessing the risks, severity, urgency, and growth, identifying the priorities, making assumptions, and identifying those probabilities based upon the known and unknown, especially when we talk about the assumptions. Obtaining intel, whether it be from individuals on scene, intel from communications, intel off of our pre-fire plan, or other building intel that's coming out of our databases that hopefully has been identified, put into our database and system, and being able to pull that up relative to building intelligence and so forth. Again, taking a look at the assumptions based on severity, urgency, and growth, those things that are known, identifying the assumptions, trying to validate as much as we can, both anecdotally and in empirically, making some determinations based upon the risk, based upon the severity, urgency, based upon the priorities, validating those in the process, and then getting into performance. The performance portion of it deals with our plan, deals with the assignments, and deals with the task activities. Recognize that, again, when we talk about sizing up, We're dealing with mental actions that are all cognitive based. It's part of our process of acquiring knowledge, our understanding, both through thought, experience, our senses. It is a result of a perception, a sensation, a notion, and or intuition. And again, don't ever underestimate the value of what your gut is saying to you or suggesting. Never underestimate what your gut may be saying or suggesting, and that intuition is a critical element regarding our sizing up, our assumptions, and our validations. When we talk about the first due process, there are five cognitive processes that are part and parcel to it. It's thinking, knowing, it's remembering, it's judging, and as well as problem solving. It's thinking, knowing, and remembering, which are the most overreaching critical elements, and they are part of critical thinking. And again, when we take a look at those elements, they are very, very critical. And I think out of all of those, I think remembering is probably the most insightful because, again, we are trying to recall based upon our experiences. We are trying to recall based upon knowledge and what we've been exposed to in a variety of different elements. But again, overreaching of all of these is utilizing and implementing critical thinking relative to the assessment, evaluation, and implementation process. There are eight cognitive core skill levels that are mission critical, both at the company and command level for our officers on the first due, as they relate to building performance and as they relate to general size up. They include sustained attention, response inhibition, the speed of information processing, cognitive flexibility and control, multiple simultaneous attention, a working memory, category formation, and then pattern recognition. And then when we take a look at those, I think we can break those down into some criticalities. I think when we talk about speed of information processing, cognitive flexibility and control, and multiple simultaneous attention is very, very critical. But probably the most critical, we talk about operations, is in that cognitive process of size up, is having a working memory, having category formation of connecting the dots, and especially when we talk about pattern recognition. That is all part of it. Looking at something, having that working memory in terms of remembering and recalling, being able to categorize those elements in terms of category formations that go back to what I talked about here earlier, building occupancy, collapse compromise, methods and materials, fire dynamics, roof, perimeter walls, compartment, floor and or ceiling, and presence and absence of voids, resiliency, integrity over time, severity, urgency, and growth. So that working element of working memory, category formation, and pattern recognition is very, very important. And I think that when we take a look at there are suggested cognitive shortcuts that come about. It's certainly not a purely linear process. It's really taking a lot of this input from a variety of both internal and external sources. It's visual. It's the audible. It's a variety of senses. It's that gut feeling and so forth that all come together. It is not a purely linear process, but it is a process that is developed just as when we talk about recognition prime decision making. It is a collective assemblance of a variety of different intel areas that come together that are utilized in conjunction with experience that we can develop the skill set on that give us the ability to provide for very quick and effective size up and utilize the most accurate assumptions or accurate both presumptions and accuracy of information that allows us to go to work. And I think, again, it's the most critical today more than ever. We're talking about the evolving building environment. That relates certainly back to when we talk about design, construction practices. We now have some buildings that cannot be evaluated and sized up with any degree of accuracy due to the hybrid nature of the building's construction systems and other attributes to the building. So that goes back and defaults back to the building. We are learning much more about fire dynamics and those aspects, and that fundamentally goes back to the compartment and considerations of risk. considerations of RIT, resiliency, integrity, and time. The influence of research continues to influence our practices and decision-making and methodologies. Having an appreciation of the expanse of time elements relative to that critical 10-minute tactical window, understanding the resource capabilities and or limitations, and that often goes back to human performance and the issues dealing with the company level. So thus, again, reinforcing the importance of building department and company and putting those together relative to our operational standpoint. So there's a number of different elements. I think we've talked a little bit about some other first do size up considerations. Emmanuel Fried in 1972, when he talked about size up and his criteria, he talked about life safety, time of fire, the height of the building, building construction characteristics, occupancy issues, fire location and fire extent, the exposure issues, water supply, weather conditions, resources, protective systems, and so forth. You know, Brunicini talked about the stages and operations and actions in the mid-1980s of development, identification of the risk, safety, tactical modes, action plans, sectoring, staging, pre-fire planning, situational awareness, having the size up, having our tactical worksheets that really gave us all the check-the-box firefighting. So there's a variety of different elements there. And certainly, again, what seems to be much more classically institutionalized was the 1991 formulation and edition of John Norman's classical approach toward the acronym of COLE as well. I think dealing with the occupancy, area potential, life hazard issues, water supply, apparatus and personnel, street conditions, weather, exposure, auxiliary appliances, location, the extent of fire, time of day, and hazards, and so forth. So again, I think I'm of the opinion that some of our classical methodologies are outdated. They are much more too linear. There has to be a much more adaptive approach. I think the 5 and 5, along with the 2 and 2 that I've mentioned here, somewhat get us to a different standpoint. Certainly is part of our adaptive fire ground management model. It falls in line with some of the criteria coming out of the suggested methodologies that are born out of the latest UL studies and insights. It also aligns to something that you may not be aware of, and I would certainly encourage you to take a look at the NFPA 1700 guide and that guide on structural firefighting that relates back to both fire dynamics and operational issues. It's born out of R&D. It does give you some variables, especially talking about some elements. So I would have you look at the NFPA 1700, NFPA 1561, 1500, 1710, 1720. Continue to take a look at our modeling. We have some considerations that we continue to provide some insights on, born out of our interpretation out of the 1700 guide that revolve, again, at the strategic consideration level, then with pre-arrival, initial arrival, the 360 assessment of the fire, fire dynamics, fire profiling, risk management, identifying strategic and tactical options and those influencers, some strategic determinations and decisions, the implementation, the process, the tactical windows, the benchmarks and PARs. These all have variables. The tactical considerations relative to that size up are going to include such items as the predictability of building performance. That, again, is a learned element. Fire-specific tactical considerations dealing with building type considerations, both in terms of type and occupancy. Tactical windows, benchmarking that somewhat are of a sliding scale, but they all fall under that 10-minute window. Alternate techniques and methodologies, going back to preferred techniques and methodologies based on building type, occupancy type, alternate techniques and methodologies, safety considerations, understanding the company level variations on human performance, and the ability to implement. Those are part of that consideration and some of those influencers. So that has really, I think, taken us to the end point here when we talk about going well beyond check-the-box size up in firefighting. I would also encourage you to take a look at what one of our other colleagues, Jesse Quinalti out of California, has been putting together and advocating over the last couple of years, actually going on, I think, about 9 years, talking about slab savers and some of his insights, talking about safety profile, life profile, air tracks, building, search and rescue attack, ventilation, extension and exposure, writ, and salvage. There's some interesting things that play out of it. And again, some of the other elements there, you can go back onto some of our not too recent, but certainly within the last 8 to 12 months, some of our online insights on social media when we talk about benchmarking and PARs, talking about the integrating the OTA loop issue, dealing with observation orient, direct dealing with observe, orient, decide, and then act, and how that ties into our benchmarking, talking into our first arriving considerations of our operation, especially with that tactile window. So I want to encourage you to take a look at those particular characteristics and some of the other items here in our most recent conversation here that we've been having on building performance, and yes, again, some insights on some size ups. So I think we're going to call it a day relative to our conversation. Hopefully we've given you some information. I think it's safe to say that you'll be listening to this program a couple of times over. If you have any questions, please reach out to me. You can find my point of contact on social media in a variety of different areas. My direct email address of cnom at twcny.rr.com. Look me up. I'll be more than happy to give you spend a little time talking about some insights. Hopefully you'll have an opportunity to take in some of our upcoming national lectures as we continue to provide programming across the United States and internationally, and as well as many of our upcoming reading the buildings, walking tours. If you're interested in bringing any of our building construction classes and lectures, and there's a variety of different things, just drop me an email. I'll get you a catalog of our programs. But more importantly, I would certainly encourage you to take a look at some of our opportunities to bring both our hybrid programs, our classroom presentation that takes the classroom into the streets, and it really gets into sizing up our buildings and with street level observations, walking the streets in the first view of your response areas, or looking at target hazards, having curbside conversations with the cadre of attendees, and really putting into practice a firm understanding of the built environment, because as I've always stated, building construction is as fundamental to structural firefighting as water is to fire suppression. And we just truly need to understand the built environment and apply it into our process methodologies and practices at the tactical, at the command level, to really do what's necessary, and that support the mission to protect the public that we are sworn to protect. So with that being said, until next time, companies are in quarters and off the air, stay safe. But keep in mind, there's a job being worked somewhere in the streets, in your city, across the country, and around the world, doing what we do best and being who we are, and that's firefighters. So take care, everybody. Stay safe, and we'll see you on the next edition of Buildings on Fires, Taking It to the Streets. I'm your host, Chris Naum. Stay safe, and we'll talk next time. Thanks again, everybody.
Attention, first responders. Ready for a new challenge? You can turn your leadership skills into deliciousness by becoming a Firehouse Subs restaurant owner. First responders will receive a $100,000 cash incentive to help open their restaurant. Continue serving after service. Visit FirehouseSubsFranchising.com today.
Breathing in diesel exhaust fumes is like walking into a fire without a mask. Over time, those toxins lead to cancer. Protect yourself with MagnaGrip, the easiest, most reliable exhaust removal system that features a true 100% seal to eliminate diesel exhaust fumes. To get free grant assistance, visit MagnaGrip.com.